Hello and welcome to Background Briefing. I'm Ian Masters, and today we'll look into a number of stories and issues in the news. With Newt Gingrich and Mitt Romney polling even in Florida and more primaries in southern states to come, we'll begin with an analysis of Newt Gingrich's southern strategy with Drew Weston, a political psychologist and neuroscientist and professor of psychology and psychiatry at Emory University. We will discuss what political antidotes might or could be used against ignorant, racist Republican voters who believe Obama is a Muslim with a fake birth certificate. Then Robert Young Pelton joins us. He is the founder and publisher of thesomaliareport.com, and we will discuss the rescue operation in Somalia that freed an American aid worker and a Danish worker with a demining unit. We will examine the changing tactics of piracy in this lawless, failed state as pirates move their activities onshore because of increased naval activity against them. Then finally, we'll speak with Ian Kim, the campaign manager of Rebuild the Dream, which, along with MoveOn.org and other progressive organizations, recently sent a letter to President Obama urging him to act and provide mortgage relief for more than 10 million American homeowners underwater, as well as pursue criminal charges against those who committed the massive fraud that led to the crash in 2008. We will discuss the president's announcements in last night's State of the Union of a financial crimes unit. Joining us now is Drew Weston, a clinical personality and political psychologist and neuroscientist and professor in the Department of Psychology and Psychiatry at Emory University. He formerly taught at the University of Michigan, Harvard Medical School, and Boston University. He's the author of The Political Brain, The Role of Emotion in Deciding the Fate of a Nation. Welcome to Background Briefing, Drew Weston.
Thanks, Ian. Great to be back on.
And give us a sense then, since you're in Atlanta, I don't know whether Newt Gingrich used to be your congressman, but he was, I think, wasn't he the congressman from Mount Marietta there in suburban Georgia?
He was quite near me. Fortunately, it's kind of like a bad case of the plague. You hope it's a couple counties over, which he was.
So give us a sense of his southern strategy, because he's clearly doing a lot of sort of race baiting. And in the acceptance in South Carolina, he castigated and lectured the press saying, and the establishment saying, that they don't get it, they don't understand, that it's not my debating skills, as the press report, but I connect with the real people about real issues. And he also infers, and he said, and not inferred, he's quite clear, that the last 30 years the country has been sort of captured by some liberal elite that's taking it in an un-American direction. What's he talking about?
Well, it depends on which universe you're in. You know, if you're in the universe of the voters who he is trying to appeal to, he's saying all the right things. You know, there's this liberal elite that's put these activist judges like Alito and Roberts, who are passing all this activist, who are making all these activist liberal judicial rulings, and there's a liberal elite that controls the media like Rupert Murdoch. And there's always been this, historian Doug Hofstadter called it the paranoid style in American politics. And he's really appealing to the Oklahoma City bombers of the world. But then there's this other piece, which you're referring to, the Southern strategy, he's about as unsubtle about it as we've seen in a lot of years. Started by Richard Nixon with the able-bodied welfare loafers, which, you know, everybody pictured black people, and then continued with Ronald Reagan with his welfare queens. Haley Barbour's been pretty unsubtle with his descriptions of Mississippi people on Medicaid who, you know, drive up in their BMWs to pharmacies and claim they don't have the money for a copay. And then you got Newt Gingrich talking about Barack Obama's a food stamp president. You don't get, I guess the last comment on that would be that I've been struck by the questions raised by the quote unquote liberal media about this, who have been asking the question, is this race baiting? It's kind of like asking, is grass green? if that isn't race baiting, I can't imagine what would be.
So how is it going to play, though, this strategy in a more diverse state, Florida? Of course, the north, the panhandle, is really the south. But the south of Florida is fairly pluralistic. You've got a big Jewish vote. Of course, most of that's Democratic. You've got the Miami Cubans who tend to vote Republican, and then the corridor down the middle. What's your sense of where he's going to tailor this message that was so successful in South Carolina? Because throughout Super Tuesday, it's a lot of the southern states where I'm sure it's going to play well.
Yeah, you know, he's doing one thing, I think, that one thing wrong and a couple things right in this neck of the woods. I think the thing that he's doing, I mean, putting aside the ethics of all this, which is, you know, I think race baiting is about as low as you get, and history will look back at people like him the same way they looked at Richard Nixon for it. And it, you know, it's a pretty despicable practice, but it's you know, clearly very successful among the people who fly the Confederate flag in their you know, on their state capital in South Carolina. But the part of it that is likely to be successful is that you're absolutely right that northern Florida is really an extension of Georgia. Of South Georgia, and you're looking at people who you know, come from families that have been around here since the Civil War. I live in Georgia, and this is going to play quite well with them, and I think he's going to win a lot of those voters with this kind of you know, dog whistle race baiting stuff. He does have to worry that the race baiting Latino voters will hear the race baiting and get concerned about it, because they know that they're the next race over. You know, when you go after black people that way, he's made a couple of comments about brown people that way too, about Spanish being the language of the ghetto, which he had to explain himself on. And so it's not hard to figure out what's in the heart of someone who can call Barack Obama the food stamp president. You know, what's working for him is the fact that two things. One is that that Mitt Romney has tried to be the better racist on immigration, you know, by telling young people whose parents came here without papers, who themselves didn't do anything wrong, to go back to Mexico where they belong when they've never stepped on Mexican soil.
Yeah, self-deportation, I think he called it.
Yes, self-deportation was a great one too. He's really blowing himself up with the Latino population. But the other thing that Newt's doing right is he's using right-wing populism in the way that the Tea Partiers did a couple of years ago. And it's really resonant because people are really angry at corporations, and the left, as represented in people's minds by the Democratic Party, which is, you know, these days in complete shambles, has been really hasn't used populist language very much at all, and has left it to the right to use. The president tried to summon his inner populist last night. And in Kansas, but other than that, we haven't seen much of it. So you know, Newt's getting at that kind of angry right wing populism, and that's gonna help him out.
Particularly, I think, with the so-called Reagan Democrats, right? As well as the Dixiecrats.
No, I think that's right, and you know, they're angry for many reasons, but you know, the biggest one being that they've perceived correctly that they're getting the shaft, and unfortunately, Democrats haven't figured out a way to talk with them about it, because this should be a natural issue for progressives, is the issue of a government of, by, and for big corporations instead of by, and for the people. That should naturally be a position from the left, and instead it's been taken over by the right. And Gingrich has been very opportunistic in picking it up, even though, you know, he's one of the biggest offenders.
Again, I'm speaking with Drew Weston, a clinical personality and political psychologist and neuroscientist and professor in the Department of Psychology and Psychiatry at Emory University. He's the author of The Political Brain, The Role of Emotion in Deciding the Fate of the Nation. And we're talking about the extent to which the fate of the nation might be decided by either Newt Gingrich or Mitt Romney, who seem to be tearing each other apart. At the very least, one has to assume that if they make it to the Republican convention in Tampa, they'll both be damaged goods. So when you say the Democrats are in disarray, I think you have to also say the Republicans are in disarray too, aren't they?
They are. I mean, the disarray of the Democrats, I think, is just that they no longer represent the party of the middle class and of working people. And you know, despite their protestations, they haven't done very much for working people in the last few years. When you know, there's been a lot of rhetoric, but the actions haven't followed. The foreclosures have been fast and furious, while the trillions of dollars from the Fed at zero interest has been going to the banks that have been foreclosing on them. That's not normally what Democrats are supposed to do. But you know, I think Obama is the luckiest man in the world. You and I were having a conversation about this before the show. That you know, he got to run against a doddering old John McCain who twisted himself in a pretzel to win over the right wing lunatic fringe in 2008, and he's going to get to either run against a Newt Gingrich who has carries with him much more baggage than will fit in the overhead compartment, and the flight attendants are gonna be pulling that stuff out. Or he's going to be running against Mitt Romney and his 15% taxes and his Cayman Island tax shelters and his absolutely deaf ear for the pain of the average American who can't get that 15% tax break on his $10 or $15 million a year.
Well, Drew Weston, you wrote a piece in the New York Times that certainly got the White House upset about what went wrong in the first few years there in terms of how they missed the big one, which was how come the Tea Party ran away with the outrage on Wall Street while the White House and the left, you know, left that one on the table. And, you know, it's worth noting that for all of Mitt Romney's privileges in terms of tax rates of 13.9%, on $23 million in 1 year, and he won't release the earlier years, which I think are probably really some much, much more smoking guns in there, because a lot of that carried interest is at the behest of Senator Chuck Schumer, isn't it?
Well, that is kind of a sad thing about our one-party system right now.
Right. But how does the president conduct a campaign against this venality, this vitriol, this hatred? I think in many ways the subtext for much of what's being said about him by both Gingrich and Santorum, and you know, Santorum did not correct that woman recently who said that, you know, he's a Muslim and an imposter, and he sort of smiled in his beatifical way. So this seems to be out there in the electorate, this rampant ignorance. What's the political antidote to racist ignorance?
Well, you know, it's a great question, and the lucky thing for the president, I think, is again that both of these guys are so flawed that whichever one runs against him will probably lose simply because he'll either come off as so out of touch, or Gingrich will have some kind of psychiatric episode and or declare himself the Messiah or something like that, that just completely turns the electorate off. But I think he's probably gonna survive those racist attacks. But you know, in general, the best strategy is the one that we learned about about as clearly as you can get in 2008 when the Reverend Wright catastrophe was visiting itself on the Obama campaign and you know, white people were seeing that endless loop of Reverend Wright attacking America and saying, you know, God damn America and all that kind of stuff, and this was Obama's preacher, And he gave a brilliant talk, a speech on race, in which he spoke openly about the issues. And speaking openly about race is actually the best way to deal with these kind of subterranean attacks. And the reason for that is actually there's a very good psychological reason for it, which is that our better angels on race tend to be our conscious values. That the average American, the average white American, does not wake up in the morning, look in the mirror, and say, "I'm a racist and I'm proud." Most of us don't want to be racist. We don't want to be prejudiced. We think of ourselves as good and decent people who don't judge people on the basis of their color. So if you speak directly to those values and get them out on the table, then people respond really well to it. If, on the other hand, you let this stuff stay subterranean and you let people make those dog whistles of the food stamp president, and you let it fester unconsciously, that's where the greatest prejudice is today. It's either unconscious or barely conscious. And the last thing the president should want to do is to let people, the Gingrich voters or the independents who could hear him sounding smart, because he can sound quite smart when he's not saying something really stupid. That when he's sounding smart, when they hear something like that, they could turn their resentment against freeloaders instead of against the freeloading corporations. They could turn it towards people who are poor and who they automatically picture as black, which by the way is just one of the other fallacies behind what Gingrich is saying, is that the average person on food stamps right now actually happens to be white because George W. Bush put so many white people out of a job, particularly white males. So if Barack Obama is the food stamp president, he is the president who has presided over the greatest number of white people on food stamps.
Well, Drew Weston, I thank you so much for joining us here, and we should stay in touch, because this race is going to get nastier, not to mention longer.
Well, it's always a pleasure to be on, and I can't believe, Ian, that you would call it a race. That's one of those dog whistle things. No, I'm just teasing.
Bye for now.
Take care.
You too. Again, I've been speaking with Drew Weston, a clinical personality and political psychologist and neuroscientist and professor in the departments of psychology and psychiatry at Emory University. He formerly taught at the University of Michigan, Harvard Medical School, and Boston University, and is the author of The Political Brain, The Role of Emotion in Deciding the Fate of a Nation. We're going to take a brief station break, and we'll be back talking about the rescue operation in Somalia.